I'll ask the marshal to call the next case.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brian, Judge Jessen, Judge Rodenberg, the Honorable Jeffrey M. Brian presiding. This case is number A210992, City of Shorewood Respondent versus Guy Gerald Sanchagrin et al. Appellants.
Good morning. And I want to thank the attorneys, first of all, for being willing to participate in this form of argument. We're doing it remotely and not in person, but the same rules would apply as if we were in person at the Judicial Center. So I want to make that clear. I also want to mention a couple of things. Number one, we understand that from time to time there might be interruptions. We will try and keep them to a minimum and ask that you do the same, but we'll also be understanding if any should occur. And if there are technical problems, we will accommodate as best we can and ensure that you have the full amount of time to which you're allotted and entitled. With that, we'll begin our arguments this morning. Mr. Curtis, are you prepared to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Keene, may it please the court. In May of 2017, when the appellants installed their dock in the city of Shorewood, that dock was not precluded by the version of the Shorewood Code of Ordinances in place at that time, and it was erroneous of the trial court to find otherwise. For ease of reference, I want to just indicate that the way I'm going to refer to the applicable code is to the 2006 code. The city of Shorewood changed the applicable ordinances in July of 2017. And it's our position that those changes in that code aren't the ones that are applicable. It's the code that was in place before that. So refer to that as the 2006 code. That being said, the trial court fundamentally misapplied the law regarding interpretation of ordinances. And not only did the trial court do that, but the trial court basically misunderstood facts that were applicable to the case and then went on to create its own facts to support its decision. As the court is aware, Frank's nursery case to interpret a zoning ordinance, the court's to apply the plain meaning of the applicable language. It's to construe the language strictly against the city and in favor of the property owner, and it's to consider the underlying policies of the ordinance. The trial court incorrectly applied that rule. In particular, the trial court incorrectly applied the plain meaning portion of that rule because it ignored the definitions that were already a part of the ordinance. In May of 2017, the city had an ordinance in place that regulated docks. Part of that ordinance, however, included the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District Code of Ordinances.
Mr. Curtis, if I can jump in here, I think we're familiar with the briefing and the argument and the provisions of the ordinance that you're citing. And to cut to the chase a bit, if the 2006 definition of dock includes a broad enough definition is a broad enough definition to include a temporary or seasonal dock, then why would we look to the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District Code definitions?
Because the applicable provision that the city is attempting to enforce only applies to some of the docks that are defined in the code or that are included in the code, and not all of them. So the city has a general definition of a dock. There's no question about that. And no one's arguing that appellant's dock wasn't a dock. But the preclusion, the language that precluded my client's dock, according to the city, says that it applies to permanent docks and floating docks. That's the way they wrote it. Docks, permanent or floating. It doesn't say anything about a seasonal dock. And so the question is, if there are permanent docks, floating docks, and seasonal docks, and you only preclude two of them, then you haven't precluded the seasonal dock. And therefore, it is not subject to that particular provision.
So, Mr. Curtis,
and so that's the reason that you can't simply rely on the general definition of dock, because the city made the decision to carve out in its language of the applicable ordinance those two kinds of docks. And the city made the decision to include the LMCD code as part of its code. Having done that, it has to, you can't ignore the parts of the code or the LMCD code because you don't like them or they don't fit into the manner in which you want to interpret.
Mr. Curtis, if I may.
Sure.
And that was going to be actually my question was about whether we even get to the definitions under the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District Code, you know, which deal with, as you point out, seasonal docks. Don't we only get there if they are, we only get there if there are not more stringent regulations set out in the city code. So that's kind of my quandary here. If we say as a matter of plain language, the city code definition of dock is more stringent than we would look at under the LMCDC, I'm acronym challenged. Then we don't even go to that, right? Because the city's more stringent. So we don't get to that, your definitions. Tell me why I'm wrong about this.
Sure. I think it's wrong in two parts. First of all, the definition of dock that the city has is a broad definition. It's not a narrow definition. It's not a more stringent definition. It's in fact a broader definition.
But isn't it broader in the sense that we're broadly defining docks and we're saying, no, you can't have them if there's, unless there's a house or some sort of home.
Sure. I mean, it encompasses all of them, but the restriction does not encompass all of them. The restriction only encompasses two docks, permanent docks and floating docks. It doesn't encompass all of the docks. And so the question is, why would you have a definition of a dock that's not applicable? The best, I think, evidence of the fact of the appellant's position is that the city felt the need and did change the language in its ordinance to take out the qualifiers so that it would in fact apply more broadly to all of the kinds of docks. It had it done that originally, had that been the language in May of 2017, the city wouldn't have needed to deal with it because it would have applied to all docks. But the city, in fact, limited its own application of that provision.
But we only get to that issue, don't we, Mr. Curtis, if we believe that the language, the definitions are ambiguous, because then we could go to extrinsic evidence, right?
When you say provisions, I guess it depends on which provision we're talking about. The provision that the city is employing against the appellants is the provision that says no docks, permanent or floating, were allowed. Okay, so we know what a dock is. That's defined. Our clients have a dock. There's no question about that. There's a definition in the ordinance of a permanent dock. So we know what that is. And there's not any reasonable argument to say that the appellant's dock is a permanent dock. There's the use of the word floating in that preclusion. Now, there is no definition of floating in the ordinance anywhere, but it's pretty clear from the facts that were put to the court, as well as the definition of seasonal dock, that appellant's dock is not a floating dock. So it's neither a permanent dock nor a floating dock. Therefore, it's not part of that preclusion. So it's not a question, I don't think, of whether that, in fact, I don't think that that provision is ambiguous in that sense. I think the provision is fine. It says no docks permanent, which is not, and it says no docks floating, which it's not. So if my client's dock isn't permanent or floating, you don't have to go beyond that. That's the plain language.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions about the nature of permanent docks. What happens in the wintertime with a permanent dock?
It stays in the lake.
Okay. And what if there's some tension, I see it, between your argument as it relates to the non-conforming use under the current code and why, in your brief, you make a pretty strong argument that by statute, you can replace non-conforming structures. And so it seems to be doing maybe some tension. I'm wondering what your response would be if you have a seasonal dock and you are arguing under the non-conforming use that you're entitled to replace it or put it back out there every season in perpetuity. Doesn't that sort of mean you have a permanently seasonal dock? And doesn't that make the dock more permanent by nature?
I don't think it makes the dock more permanent. I think that there's two things here. I think one, there's the question of the structure, and one, there's the question of the use. So a permanent dock is defined by its structure. It's there. It's meant to be there permanently. It's not meant to be removed. It's sunk into the lake. The city of Waconia versus dock case has a pretty good description of what a permanent dock is. And so it's meant, you know, it's almost certainly more likely to be, a marina or something that's a more commercial kind of a dock, because it's a pretty expensive proposition, as that city of Waconia dock case talks about, to take it in and out. It's not going to be the average guy that's going to be able to put in a $250,000 permanent dock. But the use is the same. I mean, the use is it's a dock, whether it's a permanent dock or it's a dock, whether it's a dock that comes in and out each year. And so I don't think it's a question of it becoming a permanent dock. It's a permanent use, or it's an ongoing use of a seasonal dock. I don't think there's any question about that. And under the grandfathering provision, that's perfectly applicable. In fact, the language of that provision says replacement. So if I wanted, as long as I don't expand it, I could replace that dock every year with a brand new dock, as long as it wasn't an expansion of the use. From my standpoint, the designation of permanent is a fairly easy definition, both in the definitions that are in the code, as well as the guidance that you get from the city of Waconia versus dock case in terms of what is a permanent dock. I think that the trial court in this case completely erred in calling the appellant's dock a permanent dock when it's clearly not, doesn't come close to meeting the definition, and it doesn't come close to meeting the Supreme Court's perception of what a permanent dock would be.
Is there in the city order, in the city ordinance, any definition or reference to seasonal docks?
Only by incorporation of the LMCD code. There's
right.
No,
we understand it's in the Lake Minnetonka code, but is there anywhere in the city code that talks about the subject of seasonal docks?
There's not. There's only the only definition of dock of any type that derives from the city's code is the definition of dock itself. The language that's in the city code doesn't have, so floating has no definition anywhere. Permanent doesn't have a definition in the city's code, again, otherwise adopted by the LMCD code. And I would note that in 2006, the City Planning Commission and the LMCD met, and they talked about the fact that the dock definitions and provisions were problematic and that they should fix them. And they did nothing for 11 years. And as a result, when it came to May 2017, there were still no definitions other than those that were incorporated by the LMCD provision. The trial court essentially makes up things in this particular case for apparently to fit its desired result. It calls the appellant's dock a permanent dock, and it justifies its granting of the motion on the argument that that appellant's dock is a permanent dock. But it does that by creating its own definition. It doesn't make any sense if you have a definition already in a provision that you would go outside the provision and create a separate definition. That's clearly an abuse of the court's, they don't have discretion in that sense, but it's clearly an error on the court in terms of reading what the law is if you ignore the provisions that are already there. And then you turn around and create one that's not there and not supported by anything other than what the court says is a permanent dock, that makes no sense at all. How is their plain meaning? How is that interpretation and finding of the plain meaning when you have to go, when you ignore what's already there and go outside the parameters of the language to make up your own and to make up facts? Neither party argued that the appellant's dock was a permanent dock. Neither party argued that the kind of dock that the appellants have is a permanent dock. The court, for whatever reason, decided to do that on its own and made up that definition. And having made up that definition, it then applied it and said, therefore, the appellant's dock is now precluded because it's a permanent dock. Well, that's clearly not correct. It's not a permanent dock, and it doesn't meet any of the definitions of permanent dock. In fact, if the dock was permanent, the LMCD code requires that a person with a permanent dock get a permit. My clients have never been required to get a permit for their dock because it's not permanent.
Thank you very much, Mr. Curtis. You'll have 5 minutes remaining for rebuttal. Mr. King, good morning. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, honorable judges, Mr. Curtis. This case is before the court on appellant's appeal of an order of the district court on cross motions for summary judgment, enjoining the appellant's installation of a dock on Lake Minnetonka. The appellants bring this appeal citing three errors of the district court. First, they argue that the district court erred in granting injunctive relief in favor of the city. Second, they argue that the district court erred in concluding there were no disputed issues of material fact. And third, the district court erred in its interpretation of the 2006 city code to prohibit appellant's dock. Shorewood dock law is well settled. There really are very few dock disputes, given the value of one dock with two boats allowed. The appellant's argument that an injunctive relief is inappropriate is really well settled, and the court addressed this in their findings that injunctive relief is appropriate as explicitly authorized under state statute for as a proper and favored remedy in zoning violations. I don't think that's disputable. Second, the appellants argued the district court erred in finding there were no disputes of material facts. As noted, this case was brought to the court on cross motions for summary judgment. The operative word here is material. Of the seven facts appellants are alleged to be in dispute, even if the city were to concede these facts as alleged, it would not change the only fact that matters, and that is appellants installed a dock on their property in violation of the city code. Finally, appellants argue at length this interpretation question, seasonal, permanent, floating. But even the appellants recognize that this is a dock. And the district court got it right. They cut to the chase in their findings that a dock is an accessory use. And an accessory use may only be established when subordinate to a principal use. And there is no principal use of this property. The property, as noted in the record, is too small to support a residential structure as a principal use. No principal use, no accessory use. The analysis can end right there. We don't have to wrestle with whether the dock was seasonal, floating, or permanent.
Well, Mr. Keene, I'm going to jump in because I'm concerned about the the binding case law that requires us to construe the language of a city code against the city and in favor of the landowner. So as I look at the prohibition language, it says it says docks and wharves, comma, permanent or floating. And so I think that if there's some ambiguity as to whether permanent or floating refers to both docks and wharves, if there's some ambiguity about whether or not those two subcategories, permanent and floating, are the only two, or whether there's a third that's neither permanent nor floating, if there's some ambiguity, wouldn't we then, because of the case law requiring us to interpret the city code and construe it in a certain way against the city, wouldn't we then have to look to the definitions in the Lake Minnetonka Conservation District Code?
Your Honor, the Frank's Nursery case is certainly a battle cry cited by property owners on all issues of interpretation. But there's a third leg of the Frank's case that matters most, and that is that the interpretation must be taken in consideration of the underlying policy. And the underlying policy here is no principal structure, no dock. And that is the underlying policy that is applicable throughout the city of Shorewood and has been even-handedly applied for decades. And so the Frank's Nursery, we certainly can interpret this giving
but benefit. The problem is becomes kind of circular, Mr. Keene, because when you say no principal structure, no dock, that's not what the ordinance says. The ordinance says docks and wharves, comma, permanent or floating, comma, shall not be built, used, or occupied without a principal dwelling. So it doesn't say no dock. It says something different. And if what it does say is ambiguous, then your argument doesn't help us out. The purpose of the ordinance here doesn't get you out of that problem. We would still be looking to resolve that ambiguity.
With all respect, Your Honor, the district court concluded that the dock is an accessory use. And that is indisputable, and an accessory use may only be lawfully established when it's subordinate to an allowable principal use.
Is there any principal use at all to that property then?
It's vacant, Your Honor.
Okay, so what is, I'll let the other judges jump in here. I'm sorry to take up so much time. It seems the principal use is different than principal dwelling, and that you can have a piece of property for a principal use that doesn't require having a principal dwelling on that lot.
If I can ask a question about section subdivision 14B, I think that's where Judge Brian was going. And let me pose a, let's take it outside of the context of this particular circumstance and look at that language. You would agree that that's sort of clunky language, and it's probably why the city amended the ordinance, right, Mr. Keene?
The city did clarify the ordinance. That is correct.
Right. What if that language,
2017?
What if there were a city ordinance that said motorized vehicles and non-motorized vehicles, two-wheel or four-wheel, shall not be operated on city sidewalks? Would unicycles still be permitted on city sidewalks?
If it was motorized, it would not. I would say all motorized vehicles would be prohibited, given the underlying policy that motorized vehicle. What if it was a six-wheel vehicle or a tricycle? It still is a motorized vehicle.
Permanent or floating only modifies wharves in this ordinance. Is that your view of things?
permanent or floating, as relates to this definition, is not exclusive. It is a modifier to include docks and wharves, not whether permanent or floating, but inclusive of permanent or floating.
I think, Mr. King, you're looking at the general definition as opposed to 14B, where Judge Rodenberg was asking. 14B, docks and wharves, comma, permanent or floating, comma. And so the question is, does it only apply to wharves? Is that your argument? Or is your argument something else?
My argument is that docks and wharves generally, whether permanent or floating, as well as the general definition is docks and wharves.
Well,
and it's not limited.
The general definition of dock includes wharf, right? Or pier.
Correct.
But then I'm still trying to figure out how you're reading subdivision 14B. We have to do something with the words permanent or floating. If they're there, they have to mean something, right?
They do, Your Honor.
So we can't read subdivision 14B as just saying docks and wharves shall not be built, used, or occupied on land within the R districts unless a principal dwelling is there. We can't read it that way, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So what does permanent or floating modify? Just wharves or docks and wharves?
Docks and wharves.
Okay.
But we are now engaging in the slicing of the cheese that appellants are trying to spin in this case. The fact of the matter is, it's a dock. And the district court found properly that a dock is an accessory use. And the larger prohibition in the city that is relevant to this piece of land is that where there is no principal use or principal dwelling, there may be no accessory use.
Is there some other provision other than subdivision 14B of section 120103 that tells us that?
Tells us what?
That what you just said, that is, there's no permissible accessory use in the absence of a principal use.
Yes, section 120103, 14B and E, as found on page 8 of the district court order, addresses those definitions and interpretation of accessory, permitted, and principal use.
B and E, as recited on page 9 of the district court's order, are from the July 2017 ordinance. Was there similar language in the 06 ordinance?
Yeah, that's found on page 8 of the district court order.
Okay, E is about the 10 feet from the lot line. We're not talking about that one. We're talking about B, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and I'm still trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with those words, permanent or floating. It sounds like you want me to ignore them.
Which is pretty much what the district court did, Your Honor.
But we generally don't ignore words in an ordinance or statute.
That is correct, but the district court applied in their analysis a plain meaning interpretation of the 2006 code. And that is how the district court reached its conclusion that the dock was prohibited under its interpretation of the 2006 code.
So, Mr. Keene, if I may jump in here. We know we're supposed to interpret, to give zoning ordinances their plain and ordinary meaning. You and Mr. Curtis both say that the plain and ordinary meaning of these ordinances support your very different positions. So normally, because there's, you know, in statutory construction analysis, where we would have two reasonable interpretations that are very different, we'd say, oh, this statute or here ordinance is ambiguous. So if the panel were to find that it was ambiguous, what should we do next?
The district court did not find the ordinance ambiguous.
And we review that de novo, right?
And apply, that is correct.
And so I understand you may not agree, and the panel may not. I'm just asking, hypothetically, since you're both saying the plain and ordinary meaning of this are the two diametrically opposed things, if we say, then that tells us it's ambiguous, what should the panel do?
The panel can still look to the fact that this or any dock is an accessory use. And accessory uses are not permitted where there is no principal use. That can end the analysis right there. Whether or not this court agrees with the interpretation of the district court, the plain meaning of the interpretation of the district court, it's still a dock. And a dock is an accessory use, and accessory uses are not permitted without a principal use.
Thank you very much, Mr. King. Mr. Curtis, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to Judge Rodenberg's question about the language permanent and floating, the respondent in its brief at page 15 states that the language should really read docks and wharves, including permanent or floating. So in that paragraph, it says the plain meaning of the phrase, quote, docks and wharves, permanent or floating, is that docks and wharves, including permanent or floating. So it's pretty clear that the city's position is that permanent and floating does in fact qualify the word dock. That it's not just qualifying, you can't look at the grammatical and say it's docks and permanent or floating wharves. That's never been their position. It's not what they wrote. It wouldn't be a proper construction of the language anyway. It would be pretty clear that the city means for permanent and floating to apply as well to the term docks in that particular provision. I would also want to address the question of accessory use. If you go back and you look at the provisions on page 8 of the order, and you look at the language with regard to those, there actually is not a statute. There's not a provision that says no accessory use without a principal use. There's not a provision. They haven't cited one anywhere. It talks about principal uses. It talks about accessory uses. Talks about things like that, but there's not one that actually says that in the 2006 code. And not surprisingly, when they did the amendments in July of 2017, they very specifically amended all of those provisions to say a dock is an accessory building, not even a structure, it's a building, and an accessory building is not allowed. The trial court talked about the provision of 1201.03 subdivision 2, I think it's D1. Well, that was the 2017 language. That's not the 2006 language. No detached accessory building shall be allowed. That language is after they changed it. That's not before. You can't apply that language to my client's dock if it was not applicable when they put their dock in May of 2017. So all of the things that the city did after they sent my clients their notice of violation, and my clients pushed back and said, no, we read the ordinance. We know what it says. You're wrong, city. And what did the city do in response? City went, oh, well, okay. They withdrew the ordinance, the violation under the 2006 code. They changed the 2006 code substantially. They admitted that two of their city officials admitted that the language was conflicting and needed to be clarified. They never tried to enforce the 2006 code against my clients ever again. When they filed their criminal charges, they filed them under the 217 language, not 2006. When they brought this action, they filed it under the 2017 language, not 2006. Well, why not? If 2006 is clear, the plain language of 2006 precludes my client's DOC, then why is it necessary to make all of those changes and then never try to enforce the language in place when my client's DOC goes in? The respondent says that we call that a tacit admission. I don't think it's a tacit admission at all. I think it's an actual admission. I mean, they said conflicting. They said needs to be clarified. So it's pretty clear that the city and the respondent understood that its language of the 2006 code failed to do what it thought it did. You know, and so if you go to the second Frank's Nursery provision that says you're to hold this against the city and for the benefit of the property owner. Okay, well, my clients paid a bunch of money to get that property for the purpose they wanted to use it for. They relied on what the city's language said. If the city messed up the language, that's the city's problem. That's not my client's problem. And the court should find that ambiguity is held against the city and that the citizens are entitled to rely on the language that they're supposed to be subject to. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your oral arguments and as well for your written submissions. The court will take this matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory timeframe.
Thank you.